This one's good if it goes.
Oh, my goodness.
Cow.
Are you kidding me?
Let's it go.
He can fry an egg on his head right now. I mean, the guy's sizzling.
I guess you got to hope for a dramatic 40.
Oh, boy.
Oh, they got it. Jones.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dukich, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to the world's greatest podcast, better known as Courtside. And, you know, before we get started, Dan Dukich, better known as D-Squared, who basically will get fleeced in a couple of weeks, has a statement to make. So, Dan, the floor is yours.
I do. An article came out where I was quoted as saying, I assume I'm not working for ESPN, who cares? And it was totally taken out of context, and I want to explain it. A good friend, not a good friend, but a friend of mine, Slick Leonard, passed away. Slick Leonard, and I'm going to get into him during this podcast because his story is unbelievable. Pacers player, won a national championship at IU, broadcaster in the Basketball Hall of Fame. When I was going through some stuff about a month ago on Twitter, he sent me a note, very sick lately, but he sent me a note basically saying, F him, don't worry about things you can't control, period. And then some other things. And I kind of used that. And as I was talking about Slick's death, he died during my show, and I was really unprepared. I said, look, I don't know what's going to happen with ESPN. I assume they're not going to have me, but you know what? Screw it. I got to move. You know, I can't worry about things that that was the context. And then I talked about the hassle that I had been in with these professors. And I said, well, it's the best thing to ever happen to me, because my wife and I, after that, started going with a cup of coffee downstairs every day and reading the Bible since then. And I actually, on my show, I showed the number of plans that we had done for the last 34 days. And like things do, in a city of a million people, somehow this became the biggest story, and the Indy Star and the USA Today picked it up. And I got my ESPN shirt on, Seth. I love working at ESPN. I love the relationships that I have, whether it's you or Taylor or Benetti or Dave Fleming or Bart Fox or Lee Fitting, and I love it. And I was simply making a point, and I must have done it very poorly, that I can't worry, because it's a big thing in my life whether, you know, I'll be back with ESPN, because I love it. And I love being a basketball analyst, and I love doing these things with you. And I must have said it poorly. And I put a statement on Facebook. I get the Indianapolis Star listens to my show, and they'll write articles about it. And it was just a throwaway line basically to say, look, if I can't control it, I can't worry about it. And it got turned into something completely different. And I want to apologize to ESPN. I'm not apologizing to anybody else, but I'm apologizing to ESPN because I love working at ESPN. I'm not groveling for my job. I'm not doing anything like that. I'm just trying to explain something. I love it. I hope to be back. My contract is up. I love Seth, Taylor, everybody. But it was simply kind of trying to make a point that Coach Leonard Slick had made to me about don't worry about things you can't control, and I must have said it poorly. So I just wanted to get that off my chest, Seth, and be
done.
That's
good. I think it's important to be said. And you know what it is, controlling your controllables. People always laugh when I used to say that.
I did.
But it's true. And, you know, I don't know how you do what you do, Dan, because you have to go on the radio every single day for 3 hours by yourself and be interesting. And it's, you know, like, I think one thing that people don't understand is we all misspeak at times. The problem is we all don't have a platform, but we all misspeak. People misspeak every single day. And we say things that we'd want back. But obviously when you're doing it on radio or you're doing it as a public figure, it becomes that much more dramatic. But I know the essence of who you are. Like, here's my thing, just for my 2 cents. I know the essence of who you are, and I know what you're doing in your community. I know the bike drive, which, you know, you don't have to be doing. All the things that you do that you don't have to be doing basically shows you what's in your heart. And, like, to me, people need to look at that because you're incredibly talented. So, and
I appreciate that, but it's never my intent. I sometimes don't understand that I'm anything other than a local radio host, like talking to my producer and talking to people and just trying to be honest, like, you know, and usually I'm prepared for what I'm going to say, but I really wasn't. Slick died, and he's an icon in my world. Maybe not everybody else, but in my world. Indiana player, known him, used to go to when I was in Bloomington as a player. Couldn't wait to go to the local places and hear Slick Leonard's stories from when he was in college. And frankly, he had sent this note to me about, look, don't worry about anything you can't control. And it, in a very cool way, actually. And it just hit me while I was talking about him. And I said, you know, and I should not have brought ESPN in. ESPN, nobody needs to know my business. Mark Packer and I were talking about that on our show yesterday. But I did. And I just, you know, I laugh about it because my friend called me. He goes, Dan, he goes, how good is your show? We have a city of a million people. And he said, my buddy Stroke, he said, I was listening and it was just a throwaway line. Like you were making a point. And that's the headline in the front page of the Indianapolis Star. He's like, well done. Well done. And I'm like,
whoa. Whoa. That was a headline in the Indianapolis Star?
Above the fold. The first thing you see when you go to the IndianapolisStar.com, Dockage, I assume I won't be back at ESPN. And it wasn't anything with ESPN. It was just me saying, I got to assume I can't change what I can't change. I can just do my job. And it was just literally, and I've had so many people say, God, was that taken out of context? Now, I don't know what I said, truthfully, because as you said, I go 3 hours. I don't know. That was literally this much of the conversation, literally not even, because I was talking about Slick's greatness. Like, this is a man, Slick Leonard. I just want to get this out too. This is a man that literally, Seth, he told me this one time. He said, Dan, I barged into the Board of Governors meeting, the owners meeting, they were not going to let the Pacers into the NBA. He barged into the meeting. He said, I'll never forget. He said, I acted like an ass to get in, and I acted like a gentleman once I got in. And he had a presentation, however you did it, in the early 70s, and got the Pacers into the NBA. They were not going to be in there. Now, Seth, listen to this. You will not believe this. In 1977, the Pacers were leaving Indiana. So you know what Slick and his wife Nancy did? They started a telethon. Can you believe it? Like the Jerry Lewis telethon. They had a telethon. The entire community of Indianapolis came out. And just like the old Jerry Lewis, phones in the background, hey, well, donate 10 bucks. Hey, I'll donate 5,000, whatever. And he saved the Pacers, this man. He won a national championship, made the game-winning free throws. Dean Smith fouled him in 1953, Indiana versus Kansas. Missed the first, said something warm was running down his leg. Made the second, goes from there, plays 8 years in the NBA, becomes a coach of the Pacers, wins 3 ABA championships, gets the Pacers into the NBA, and saves them with a telethon, and then becomes their beloved broadcaster. And he died during my show. And I, you know, to Norby and Lee, and I apologize if I in any way embarrass them. I feel terrible about it. It was a throwaway line, and it got, like, brought into a big deal, and I don't like it. So I'm wearing my ESPN shirt. I'm on with you and Taylor.
I got a question for you. Is there any reason why you're in the laundry room?
Well, yes, if you must know. This is my wife's office. My wife, the lovely Lee Ross, is down. Dockage. I always forget that she's married to me now. She's downstairs doing the Maryland-Michigan game for Big Ten Network. So she's on coaches' calls downstairs where I normally would be. My stepdaughter, Tegan, home from Harvard, is sleeping upstairs. So I'm in her office in the laundry room.
I was just, it's a good look, by the way.
Need some wash?
It's a good look. I mean, I noticed the big thing of detergent. I can relate to it. I mean, only you could do the show in a laundry room and pull it off. Not everyone could pull it off, but, and very, very soft hands on the wedge coming in. I know that's, it's like the misconception of Dan Dockage's golf game, everyone, that will be exposed is doesn't hit it very big. Good at the irons, hits down into the ball with the irons. But what he does do is very feathery around the greens. Very feathery.
I've been lifting. I've been on Nautilus. I'm ready to hit the ball.
You've lost weight. You're melting away. I think we're going to have Coach Beard join us.
I hope.
So, hey, before Coach Beard gets on, Tommy Lloyd, Arizona. A lot of people thought, you know, maybe go by the way of North Carolina, Hubert Davis, maybe Miles Simon, maybe a, you know, maybe a Damon Stoudemire, maybe go by the way Indiana, obviously Mike Woodson. Do you think Arizona needed an Arizona man, especially coming off what they're going to have to deal with in terms of NCAA, or do you think Tommy Lloyd, who was part of the architect of Gonzaga basketball and the quality of people that they had in their program, the success they've had, good hire, bad hire? I think it's I don't rate hires. Like I did a tweet yesterday. Yeah. I want to get this off my chest. I hate when a guy gets a job, hasn't even the ink on the contract isn't even dry. Oh, yeah, that's a terrible hire. Oh, that's the greatest hire in the world. Oh, that's this. Oh, that's that. Like it takes time. Give a guy a chance to put together his staff, put together his sports staff, build his program, develop, you know, go through that process, and you know, 3-4 years later, make a decision. But it is amazing to me. We have people that absolutely kill hires, and before they even know who the person is, and give him a chance to do his job, it makes no sense to me.
It's like grading the draft after you have a draft. I mean, who knows? Like, you know, Seth, I equate it to this. Over the last, I don't know how many years, here in Indiana, everybody says, well, it's the best recruiting class Indiana's ever had. When Cody Zeller, I go, really? They're better than the 76 undefeated class? And you just don't know about hires. You don't know about recruiting classes until they get there. And then you grade them after you see what they do. But I think Tommy Lloyd's a fine hire. I honestly thought they might go with Miles Simon. It's kind of the NBA, mm-hmm. Juwan Howard, Mike Woodson kind of thing. But Tommy Lloyd, who knows the West Coast better? Who's more prepared to run a big program? You know, you can say whatever you want, Gonzaga little school, bull. That school is a major, major, major program in terms of facilities and travel and scheduling and all the things, recruiting. So I think it's a good hire. I don't know the program well enough and the infrastructure well enough to know whether they needed an Arizona guy. I felt like Indiana did because of what had transpired the previous 20 years. And Dane Fife said it really well about Indiana. And I don't know that Arizona needs to do this. I kind of think they do. Dane told me, he goes, hey, he goes, Indiana for 21 years tried to rebrand itself. And that was interesting to me. I don't know if Arizona needs to rebrand itself. Indiana came back to its previous brand without having Bob Knight, but having a Bob Knight guy. I don't know that Arizona needs to do that, Seth, but I don't know that they don't. We're going to find out. It's plain and simple.
Hey, you know who doesn't need to rebrand himself?
Chris Beard.
Chris Beard. He doesn't need to rebrand himself. Coach Beard, what is going on, brother?
You know how this drill goes. Both you guys do.
Man, you know what? Hey, Coach, before we get started, I got to tell you, Huggins looks like West Virginia head coach. You sound like Texas head coach. You got that hard-ass draw. You sound like Texas.
He's perpetually hoarse.
I know.
Coach Beard, anything going on in your life?
Man, what do you guys think about this portal?
What do you think? God.
Coach, now you got to be careful of what you say about the portal. We don't. That's the good thing. Free agency in college basketball is absolutely insane. Here's a serious question for you. All right, you're going to put together your team, and you know, you've done this before, Coach. I mean, I say all the time, the places you've coached, all right, you put together your roster, you coach your team, and you keep the same expectation, whether it's, you know, the South Carolina Warriors or the Division IIs or the junior colleges or wherever you've been. It is what it is. You coach your team, and you try to put them in a position to be successful, and, you don't lower the bar. The standard is the standard. But the portal is something. Let me ask you, like, you've got your guys on campus. You've got some commitments. We'll talk about it in a second. But, like today, do you want your kids on campus – all summer, and all of a sudden now you have a guy middle of the summer goes, wait a second, that freshman's really good. He might take some of my minutes. That dude might be out the door in the middle of July, you know, on his way somewhere else because someone got in his head and put a little static in his head and created a little unrest or whatever. Or you got some guy shopping the guy just because he wants to feel important. How do you deal with that?
I think it comes down to relationships, Coach. It really does. Like, you can't coach scared, you know. You never have been able to do that, but now more than ever. You know, in junior college, it was always the seventh class day. You know, like, a guy could, after the seventh class day, he couldn't go anywhere. So on the sixth day, we're doing three-line layups, form shooting, and letting them hoop, make it, take it up top. Then on the seventh class day, you know, the guys were always like, hey, where's the ball rack? And we're like, oh, well, we're going to do a little defense today. So, I mean, the target date definitely changes, but it all comes down to relationships. These guys have been great. We're already practicing. We got three players right now that are on board, and we're going through like full spring workouts right now. But I don't think you can, once you start coaching scared, I think you're done. But I understand your question. I mean, you know, there's also an intelligence factor.
Coach, when you, I don't necessarily think you're rebuilding a roster. Maybe you are, but from the flip side of the portal, isn't it easier to rebuild a roster with the portal?
I think so. The thing, it's too early for all of us to really, you know, sit here and write a book about it. But what's on my mind and heart right now, what's real for me is the high school kids. Like, you know, everybody's working the portal. Like, you know, you get 3-4 scholarships. Like, nobody's really looking back into that high school class. It's going to be an interesting study. Like, I literally think there's going to be a lot of players that are without spots because the older guys keep recircling. The other interesting thing is, you know, the COVID year, you got all these guys out here that have the free fifth year, but the NCAA really didn't give us any extra scholarships. Because if those guys leave, they still count in one of your 13, you know. The only way it's an extra scholarship is if that player stays here. And as it looks like, there's not a lot of players staying anywhere. I mean, the portal's like the wild, wild west. So I expect, you know, there's to be a lot of really good players that don't have scholarships that are in that senior class. And I think that's where the whole thing will get blown up.
At Purdue, something interesting happened. And I'm curious your thoughts, Seth, yours as well. Sasha Stefanovic and Eric Hunter, two starters. Matt already announced that they're going to play next year, but they're not going to play the year after when they get the extra year. Now, is that something – why do that in your mind? Would you do that in your mind? Would you announce that ahead of time? And I don't want you to get into Matt's business. I'm just talking about from your standpoint. And that's a scholarship thing, right? So you know how many scholarships you have?
Yeah, I don't want to speak for Painter too, but it also might be kind of a recruiting deal, like where he's – he doesn't want those players to think that he doesn't think that they're one-year pro guys. You know, like, I mean, all these players think that they're, as Coach says, run your own race, but they all think their race is very quick. So, again, I don't want to speak for Payne, but it might be one of those deals. He might be saying, like, hey, I got confidence that more year of college basketball, you can get to where you want to go, instead of just telling the world, like, I think this guy's a two-year guy.
Is that something that you're looking at with players right now? Like, 2 years from now, will you be here? That kind of thing? Or is this so day-to-day?
It is day-to-day, but you look at that. Like for us, we want to put a good team on the floor next year. We're confident we can. But we also want to be a real player in the 2022 recruiting class. So, you know, we don't want to be sitting here in a couple months and have a roster that has no scholarships left. So that might be what Painter's doing too.
Yeah.
Coach, you go back to your alma mater, which is like a cool thing. We were just talking about guys going back home. Difference between, in your mind, I think I know the answer, but I'd love to hear you, between coaching at Texas Tech and coaching at Texas.
I think probably still too early to really to give a definite answer. I know this. Expectations are everything to me. You know, like I tell players, like, you know, our goal is not to make the tournament. It's to win the tournament. Our goal is not to get drafted in the NBA. It's to become a second contract NBA guy, you know, life-changing deal. So same thing here. One of the things I was most proud of at Texas Tech was that we changed the expectations. But this is a different beast, and I don't run from it. It's actually why I'm here. I'm excited about it. The expectations here are very clear across the board. And, you know, I like that. We've been telling recruits, hey, everybody can't coach at Texas and everybody can't play at Texas. You know, this is a deal where you got to understand what you're getting into. I like that. You know, to me, you got one shot at life. I'm a no regret guy. I don't wake up every day scared. I wake up every day like, let's do this. So it's a perfect fit for me in terms of the expectations. And what's been really fun is trying to find players, you know, that understand that too. And we're off to a great start with that.
Your staff, you put together pretty impressive staff. How'd you go about that? What was your mindset? I mean, like, you know, obviously you want to be surrounded with people that have a shared vision. What was your mindset in putting together your staff?
All that was a part of the job decision. You know, all that stuff was on the front end, not the back end. Like, I had a vision for what Texas basketball could be. A lot of that vision is what it's already been, you know, beginning in my time with Coach Penders and Coach Barnes. And Shaka did a lot of really good things. I mean, they just cut down the nets a couple weeks ago in Kansas City. So, but the staff, the idea was always to have a non-negotiable, let's get the best guys out there. Let's all be on the same page. So it's been awesome, but it has not been surprising. I mean, to get two sitting head coaches to come back to Texas really speaks about the power and the belief that we all have. You know, to get Jarrett to come over from Kansas and to bring some of our key guys from Lubbock. So we're really talented, you know, kind of on paper, but what's really cool is the chemistry of the group's special too. You know, it's like putting together a basketball team. Those stars really don't matter. It's how everybody meshes. And I love our chemistry. Coach, we're having a lot of fun, man. We probably need to get busy working. We're in there playing 3-on-3 late at night. We need to get back to work at some point. But we're having a lot of fun together.
Hey, Coach, people ask me this all the time, and I've been out of coaching so long, I don't know the answer. But you mentioned that you're having basically spring workouts. What's a spring workout for you at Texas?
They're giving us 4 hours a week right now. You get the 2 hours skill instruction and 2 hours weight room, strength conditioning. And then they got a little bit of asterisks right now. They give you another 2 hours for, like, team meetings and stuff because of, the Zoom and all that. COVID's still affecting it. So bottom line, we're on the court right now for 2 hours a week. 3 days at 40 minutes, 2 in an hour, 4 at 30 minutes. I remember when that drill first came out, you know, it was Coach Knight was, you know, what about 5 days in an hour? Look, you know, that's, you know, Coach, your mask off a little bit. We all laugh. But, you know, we're getting after it, but we're also just, you know, with the job change with us particularly, our number one thing is to start developing the culture. And at the foundation of that is relationships. So we're using our time on the floor, really relationships. Like we huddle up probably twice as much as we normally do once we get rolling, just to continue to communicate and kind of, you know, touch our guys and it's kind of a lot of feel good out there too. It's not fluff, but it's heavy on culture.
What's your plan? Like the first 100 days, like what do you want to get accomplished? Like, you know, like here you take the job. It's, I think a lot of ways a dream job. I mean, it's a destination. It's not a location. It's actually a destination. You put your staff together. What like in 100 days from now, you want to have your roster pretty much complete. You want to, you know, are you planning a summer trip? When does summer school start? You know, hopefully things loosen up with COVID where you can actually do the things that you love to do in terms of being in there with your guys. What are you trying to get done? And then you got to do all the booster stuff and, you know, touch the people you need to touch and, you know, build the energy. Because, I mean, Lubbock, it was a built-in energy in a lot of ways because they, you know, they hadn't won in a long time where you did. And that's it. Austin's a different town. What are the things that you have to get in line like the next 100 days?
It always starts to me, Coach, with what we call the three S's. Bob Beyer, who was on our first two staffs with Coach Knight years ago at Texas Tech, taught me this. You know, it's the three S's: staff, scholarships, and schedule. So obviously we hit the ground running with the staff and we feel really good about that. You got to be taking a look at that schedule pretty early because that'll mount up on you. So that's a work in progress. You know, I think every coach has a scheduling philosophy, but that first year is always a little bit different depending on kind of what your goals are. And then, you know, scholarships, that's another way of saying players. And that's obviously the most important. One thing I've always thought about, you know, first 48 hours, first 2 weeks, first 100 days is, you know, we have that urgency in that need to get things done quickly, but I never like to sacrifice that for getting things done right. So I tell the staff, you know, I know we're in a hurry today, but let's don't make mistakes because we're going too fast. I would much rather get things right than get things done quickly, even though we all feel the urgency. you know, a big thing is let's go slowly and patiently. Let's get things done. Let's don't make mistakes. You know, like in recruiting, for example, I've always, you know, it's not the player that you don't get that ends up hurting you or costing you games. It's the guys you take that don't fit, you know, the guys that you take that can't play. So we're recruiting the best players in the world right now. You don't always get told yes. So when you get told no, we don't spend a lot of time worrying about that. We still think it's a victory because we haven't taken anybody yet that's going to be a mistake. So really in those first 100 days, we're trying not to make any mistakes, if that makes sense.
Gosh, that's a great answer.
More importantly,
most serious like Joe interviewer question I've ever asked.
the most important thing that you're bringing is the fireside chat, I assume. When does that start up, boss?
You know, early stages, we're thinking about doing the Riverside chat down here. You know, put a little flavor on it. Sure. One of the great things about Central Texas, Austin, Capital City, Hill Country, is all the water out here, whether it's lakes, rivers. There's actually a lot of water close to our campus here in Austin. So we definitely want to stick with that. That was kind of our main thing on how we connect to the fans, most specifically the students. But we might throw a little wrinkle on it and go Riverside chat down here is what we're thinking. That's about 95% done. We haven't stamped it yet, but we're hoping to get the first one on the boards next week.
Coach, if you could get some kind of, I understand the fireside chat, but you know, a nice serene river behind you on a big, huge screen. It has a good look. Speaking of that, how do you connect? I mean, the one thing about, you know, the quote unquote perception is Texas is a little like North Carolina. And, you know, people would say it's a little wine and cheesy. How do you get your stamp on the fun that Texas basketball is going to be? Because I mean, I've spent time down there. Like what you created, the enthusiasm, the ownership, the environment. How do you even kick that up a notch? Like you said, in the capital city, in a different environment. Because that man, like the environment you had was crazy.
Yeah, to me, Coach, I enjoy doing it. It's not work to me, and we've done it at every spot. Not to sound like brash or arrogant, but it's just what we do. Like, we went to Fort Scott Community College years ago. We ended up selling out our last 9 home games. We did it at Seminole. When we showed up at Little Rock, there's about 15 people at the first game. 3 of them were guys that I lived in the same apartment complex with that I gave free tickets to. A couple months later, you know, we had consistent sold out crowds at Little Rock, not coaches talk fluffy. I'm talking about where you pull up and you can't get a ticket. We did it at Angelo State. We've done it everywhere. And at Texas Tech, you know, those first games were not like we all think of Texas Tech basketball now. So, you know, we're going to do it here. It's what we do. I enjoy doing it. At the base of it all is relationships. We got to get relationships with the student body, with campus, with the community. It's what I really enjoy doing. You know, as a head coach, you can't do everything. You delegate. But the whole idea of creating a home court advantage, that's on my desk. And that's something that I work on personally. To me, it's always kind of like a bullseye. You start right there on campus with your student body and your other sports and fans, and then you just kind of branch out. But I'm confident we can get it done. This will be the last year in the Frank Irwin Center. And next year we open up the new state-of-the-art arena. So I think the timing's perfect in a lot of ways. You know, we'll hit the ground running this year, and we'll get this thing done sooner than later.
Hey, Coach, last thing. I mean, we don't want to keep you too long. You've taken, as you mentioned, a number of jobs, and obviously championship game with Texas Tech, so as big a jobs as there is when you can do that at a job. What's the difference in this job? Like, what's the – not necessarily the recruiting and all that, but – like in Indiana, you become the head coach and it's a rock star kind of thing. You know, what's it like as the head coach of Texas?
I couldn't tell you. I'm living in the Sheraton, a block away from the gym. I'm getting take-in food every meal. Like, I don't even know what day it is. So, but I understand the question. And I look forward to when we get this roster set up, you know, getting out in town a little bit and experiencing it. But right now it's all grind. So I'm probably not the expert for that.
It's not velvet ropes and champagne bottles, popping bottles at the club. I mean, it's not everywhere you go, boss.
But I just don't think that's going to be me no matter what. You know, like if I got a choice between bottle service and a draft beer, it's going to be draft. I base my restaurant choices on how we can get in and out quickly. So, but I understand the question. I mean, again, expectations. I love that word. That's all you want as a coach, you know, to go to a place where everybody, you know, expects you to win. I think the great players want that too. Obviously, Texas, the national brand. I mean, the NBA players that have come in and out of here through different coaches is real. It speaks for itself. You know, the first day on the job to be sitting there talking to Kevin Durant and text messaging with, you know, other NBA greats, it's real. And we don't shy from it. We believe that we can recruit the best players in the world, not just the state, not just the country, the world here. And so that's just exciting. You know, as a coach, we all know, I mean, you get into it to coach the best players. I mean, it's just exciting walking out there at 3 o'clock and looking at dudes like, man, these it's just fun. And we got to that point at Texas Tech, and we start the journey at that point here, just in terms of the talent that we get to coach every day.
So many coaches badmouth the previous coach. Well, they didn't have a culture, but what are your thoughts on what was left to you?
Well, Shaka's my friend. You know, we communicate. We're as good of friends as you can be competing against each other in the same conference. You know, it's not like we go golfing every Thursday. But, I mean, we are friends, and I don't use that word anything other than just accurately. He was the first call that I made. I literally had like a 20-minute conversation with him right before we stepped on. We talked two or three times. And so I have a lot of respect for my friend. You know, they just won the championship a couple of days ago in Kansas City. He's putting players in the NBA draft. They're winning a lot of games here. The foundation's real. These guys, we got some good students on this roster, some good players, some good work ethic. So just like I really, really caught a huge break at Texas Tech following Tubby Smith, that was worth so many things. It was almost like the first 5-star recruit was the fact that we were following Tubby because of everything that he had in place. Now it's the same thing with Shaka. So I've been very fortunate in my career. Steve Shields at Little Rock, we've inherited big-time people with big-time cultures and discipline foundations. So it's a break for us, no doubt.
So talking to that, Andrew Jones back. My man Brock Cunningham, who I took to Italy with me with the my Adidas team, who's like that dude is a rock, by the way. Don't want to run into him, coach. When you're doing those drills with him, don't let him hit you. Yes. I know you're a tough guy. Don't let that dude hit you. And those three guys that you have back, I mean, and especially Andrew, you know, everything that he means and his fight and his journey. What does that mean to you?
Oh, it means everything. It's kind of a goosebump moment for me. Just like it, you know, at Tech with Keenan Evans, Justin Gray, Norris, and Zach, and those guys, they locked arms and said, hey, we're doing this. Same thing with these three guys. I think we're really close to getting 4 or 5. You know, when I come into jobs, everybody has a different philosophy, but I've never thought it's my deal to come in here and start ruling the kingdom. You know, like, hey, you're gone, you're staying. That's not how it works. Like, this deal's about relationships. Everybody's got a different time frame on when they make their decision. And we just try to communicate with guys. Even the players here that we inherited that are transferring, we got a couple really good Texas players that are going to UNLV. We got relationships with those guys. We're trying to help them in any way we can. Had a couple of those guys in the gym yesterday shooting. So, you know, it's all about each guy making a right decision for themselves. We're not begging anybody to stay, and we're not asking anybody to leave. We're just trying to get relationships with guys to see if what they want and what they see fits kind of what we're trying to do with the program. But with those three guys that are on board, I mean, I'm super appreciative and I'll never forget it. You know, there's a special bond between players and coaches. First guy you recruit, first guy that jumps on board with you. And so it's special. All three of those guys are great. What makes this just crazy, like cool is, you know, we've coached against these guys, like, you know, what seems to be a dozen times. Like, so, I mean, it's like we feel like we know them as much as any coach, maybe other than Shaka. So whether it be Jones's story, his talent, his perseverance, his ability to score, whether it be Brock Cunningham's just toughness and old school basketball IQ and identity, and then Jace is one of the best shooters in college basketball. All three of these guys, you know, it's just been cool because we feel like we already know them. It was, you know, it wasn't like a handshake and it wasn't a hug when we first saw them. It was almost like this awkward, like, last time I saw you, we were in the lines after the game, and we just kind of, you know, had that moment. Then we just hugged. So it's like, it's pretty cool coaching guys that you respected from afar for so long.
Now, do you have any of those other guys? Are there some guys that are trying to still make a decision what direction they're going?
Yeah, I think we got two or three coaches that are right there. Got some guys going through the NBA process that are being really intelligent and smart about it. You know, my deal is if you can be a first-round pick, you know, you probably don't even need me in the conversation. But when it gets to those guys that are fringe guys, you know, like there's real value in coming back to college. There's real value in coming back to Texas. So those guys have been great. And then a couple guys are just trying to decide, you know, what's going to be best for them.
Well, tell my man Brock, I say what's up. He was as fun to coach as any kid I had on that trip. And that trip, actually, Courtney Ramey was on my team in that trip, and Nazir Little and David McCormick and Brock Cunningham. He'd be grabbing me all the time, Coach. Let's go. You know, can I get a workout? Can I do this? Can I do that? He was just a great kid. But doing those workouts, I have to admit, one time, like I was getting him to do straight line drives, and he freaking hit me, and I went, holy. What am I doing? The dude is like a brick.
Yeah, he's a different beast. So him and I had a conversation maybe 10 minutes in the parking lot of the hotel where I was staying night one and two. And a couple minutes later, he just put it out there on social media. I don't quote me exactly, but y'all can find it. It's something like, met with Coach Beard. I think we're about the same things. I'll be back next year. Hook him, you know. So it was just kind of a goosebump moment, you know. You know, you never forget those guys that jump on board with you first. You know, we all know that. And, you know, he's a guy, man, we just couldn't block him out at Texas Tech. We put two guys on him. We faced him. One time in the last game we played him, he got a big tip block out. And I swear to God, he came by the bench and winked at me on the way down the floor. So I reminded him about that the other day. But, no, he's a good player. He's everything that we stand for, you know. And I tell you, Coach, he's one of those guys that gets such an identity for all the hustle plays, but don't forget this. He's a really good basketball player. You know, like he can dribble, pass, shoot. He can guard different positions. So we see a high ceiling with him, maybe a different role than he's played in the past.
That's awesome. Well, send him my best, and I appreciate you doing this. I know you got so much on your plate. You know, it'll be good. Look forward to coming down there and checking you guys out, and just keep being you.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate y'all both.
Love that dude. Yeah, he's great. You know, he is who he is. You know, I like guys that, like, he don't shy away from anything.
Oh.
And he's done it. Here's the thing. He's done it at the Angelo States. He's done it at, you know, Little Rock. He's done it in Lubbock. I mean, he's done it at hard places that aren't destinations. He can't say that, but we can say it. I mean, like, you know, we've been at the Virginia Techs and the Bowling Greens where, you know, kids don't go to sleep, put their head on a pillow and a lot of times and think about going to those places. He's at a place right now. There are kids all over Texas that put their head on a pillow. And, you know, if they could play at Texas, man, that's your life. Brock Cunningham was exactly that. He got recruited pretty hard throughout the Big 12. I just remember seriously walking back with him in Treviso. And he goes, Coach, you know, I've always wanted to go to Texas.
Yeah, it looks sad.
That was before they offered
him. I'm excited to see what he does. I really am. I think it's a perfect fit. Look, I think Texas got the perfect guy. I think Marquette got the perfect guy.
Yep.
I think Chris Beard got the perfect spot. And I think Shaka Smart got the perfect spot. I think this is a four-way win for everybody, both institution and the person. So I think it's win-win, win-win, all sides. Can't wait to see what both do because I'm a huge fan of Shock. I've always been.
I agree.
Going back to when he was an assistant in the MAC, I've always thought he's just a special guy. And I've gotten to know Chris just a little bit, not much, but just a little bit. And I think you listen to him talk, you get fired up, boss.
Yeah.
You get like, holy hell, let's go. So good for us to have him on.
Yeah. And this is the start of our New Coaches in New Places series on World's Greatest Podcast, better known as Courtside, where we're gonna take a journey with these new coaches that are taking over new jobs or first-time coaches that are getting jobs. We saw that Wes Miller, I guess, is getting the Cincinnati job, which is an interesting thing. 2 years post-Mick Cronin, and they're making a change, which is always a hard situation. But We will bring different coaches in. Hopefully next week we can get maybe Shaka and Tommy Lloyd. I just actually sent a text to Tommy Lloyd to see if he would he would join us next week to talk ball.
Well, it started last week with Woody. Mike Woodson joined us. Now Chris Beard joins us. This is where you got to come to our podcast every week. We're going to be here every week. We're not going nowhere, although I may go on vacation and be doing it beachside next week, but that's okay.
Yeah, and in 2 weeks, I'll be just getting into your pocket, so it makes a difference.
I'm going to look
right. You might be my partner. You actually might be my partner.
I'm going to look right at the camera, and I'm going to say this. Two things. One, I don't want to be your partner. And number two, I'm showing up with a brown paper bag full of cash, and I expect when I leave the Greenbrier on that beautiful Sunday after watching a ceremony that I'm sure is going to make me weep, I'm going to leave with two brown paper bags.
Well, I know if you're not weeping, I'll for sure. I weep at commercials. Imagine walking my daughter down the aisle.
Look, America. You hear this? All right. A puddle. This man is a human puddle. He starts crying when he talks about the pandemic or whatever. To watch him, I'm going to sit there. I'm going to have a bucket under his face when he walks down the aisle and catch the tears, because he will be a puddle. And I can't wait to see it, tape it, and use it against him.
I don't know. I'll be a puddle there. The first dance will definitely be a puddle. I can tell you. But it's all good.
You're a
good
puddle, man.
It's a good puddle.
Thanks for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. Check out more great podcasts from ESPN on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.